Okay, welcome everybody to the LDS PPA Roundtable for May. And this month we're focusing on interviewing, and I'm sure you all understand how important interviewing is. And I've definitely seen from my experience, it really can make or break whether you get that job. So we want to focus on that to help you really be able to get the jobs that you want, that you're really interested in. And so our facilitator today is Mariana Richardson, and she's a wealth of information. She teaches management communications to undergraduate and graduate students at BYU, and interviewing skills is part of her curriculum. She received her bachelor's degree from BYU, her master's degree from Johns Hopkins University, and her doctorate from Seattle Pacific University. She's a mother of 12 children, and I think that says a lot as well. She's a great businesswoman as well, and I'm really excited to hear from her today on interviewing. So we're going to turn over the time to her, and thank you very much, Mariana.
Thank you, Susie. Well, I wanted to start by saying I know that interviewing can be an extremely experience full of anxiety. As a matter of fact, I love this quote that was written by Daniel Handler. You probably know him better by his pen name, Lemony Snicket. He wrote, "Besides getting several paper cuts in the same day or receiving the news that someone in your family has betrayed you to your enemies, one of the most unpleasant experiences in life is a job interview." And so I'm hoping that after our time together today, that you will be able to kind of have the skills to make a job interview something that is not that terrible, but also that you will be prepared to be able to win over whatever interview that you get. So our agenda for today is fourfold. The first one, I would like to talk about when you are being interviewed, some very specific things, 12 top things that you can do. The second thing I would like to talk about are interview questions to expect and how to prepare for them. And then third, it's important to not only understand how to do a job interview and on both sides. So we also want to talk just for a second about if you are interviewing, what do you need to do? And that also helps you in a job interview to be able to be prepared for what the interviewer is going to do for you as the interviewee. And finally, I wanted to mention some of the latest articles and research that has been done on job interviews. So to start off with, we're going to talk about the top 10 things that you can do when you find out that you have a job interview. The very first thing that you can do is to do your homework. Learn about the organization. Do some things to be able to find out what their stock did. You know, what are their biggest aims and purposes as a job and as an organization. I love this story. Jack Welch tells about his son. Jack Welch was the former CEO of General Electric. And he said his son, who graduated with a master's degree from a very prestigious, you know, business school, went in for his first job interview. And as he walked in, the very first question that he had was, "How well did our stock do today?" And his son just kind of looked blankly and went, "I have no idea." And he was shown the door. And so the first thing, you need to have done your homework. You need to know about the company. That helps you also to know, do you want to be a part of this company? It enables you to feel that passion before you even go in. The second thing might be a little more obvious, but not always, and that is to be on time. Be prompt. I can remember when I went in for my job interview at BYU, I had never been to the Tanner Building before. And if you've been to the Tanner Building at BYU, you know it is a very confusing building because of the addition that they've done. So you can find a room with the same number in the building, but one half of the building has a W before the number and the other half doesn't. And so I did not know that, nor was I aware of that when I first went into the building. So I went to the wrong room. So I experienced this, and because of that, I was, of course, late for my interview. Luckily, I, you know, did some other things right and got the job, but I would say I should have, and looking back on it, I should have gone and found that room or been more familiar with the Tanner Building before I went. So even if you can, you know, drive there, figure out how long is it going to take you. Figure out the building beforehand if you can. If you know those things in advance, be able to, you know, find out so that the day of, it's comfortable. You know exactly where you're going. There's no anxiety or concern. The third is dress appropriately. That kind of goes back to this idea of do your homework. Know what the culture is like. If you're going in for an interview with a company where everyone wears suits and you come in with t-shirt, jeans, and flip-flops, right there, they know that you're not the fit for their company. On the other hand, I know at Microsoft, most people, not as much now, but especially in the research division, most people come in pajamas. And so if you came in a shirt and tie, you know, you might not get the job on that one. So understand what the business attire is for whatever the job is that you're going for. The first thing to do in preparation is to, and this may sound a little counterintuitive, but make sure you practice good posture when you're waiting for your interview. Now, Amy Cuddy had a great TED Talk and also a New York Times bestseller book called Presence. And in this book, she talks about her research that she's done at the Harvard Business School on how body language actually affects our hormone levels. And so the fear hormone is actually exacerbated by us kind of crossing our legs and folding our arms and lowering ourselves and lowering our bodies. And instead, the, you know, hormones that enable us to feel in power are those when we have body postures that are open and large. And so I always tell my students, and we even practice it, where we try power attitudes. And I tell them, I said, before a job interview, you go into the bathroom, stand like Superman or Wonder Woman, and, you know, be able to have those kinds of feelings of, I'm in charge, I have the power. Now, a little segue to Amy Cuddy's research. Yes, in October, November of last year, there was a big write-up about questioning the validity of some of her research. Even with that question, I would say this idea of watching your body posture will make you feel more powerful when you go into the job interview. Not only that, but also it makes you look better. And so that's just another good reason to make sure.
Mariana.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I totally agree with that. I really enjoy her TED Talk. And I've definitely, great at it, but there have been times when I really paid attention to having those more power and control body positions, especially in some tense meetings that I was in, and it helped me a lot. So just kind of saying yes, I completely agree that I've loved that information.
And her book is wonderful. You know, it's a great book to read just before you go in for a job interview, because she has story after story about how it can help you. The rest of my suggestions have to do while you're in the interview. So these were all kind of getting ready for the interview once you find out you have an interview. But the next one is be sensitive to body language in the room. Most job interviews now are oftentimes not one-on-one, but often you will be with the panel. And so make sure that you look at everyone on the panel when they're doing a panel interview. If it is one-on-one, make sure that you have positive body language, as we already talked about, but also that you have a firm handshake. Make sure that you come in, you know, showing confidence in the interview. Number six is to speak confidently and clearly. You know, make sure that you exhibit passion, that you want it, You know, you want his job, and you make sure that that is shown by the way you talk. And seven is be honest. Don't pretend to be something that you're not. Be truthful and don't exaggerate. All too often, if you do those things, it will come back to you and it will not be pretty or not help you at all in your career. A matter of fact, and many times, it will definitely hurt your career. And eight is tie your answers to knowledge, skills, and abilities required for the job. One of the number one things that you have to make sure that you know is the job description. That goes back to the preparation. But then when you're in the interview, go back and tie your answers to whatever specifically they're asking for and say, well, I can do this because I did this previously. And make sure you tie all of your answers to the job in question. Now, number nine is something I want us to have a little more participatory. So, Susie, this is one that I'm going to have you participate in. This is the idea of strengthening your content. When you strengthen your content, you're actually going to make sure that you bring into play things about, you know, as I stated before, things that you have done that can help in this job. And the way you do that is with something called PAR, and it's a good acronym to remember in job interviews. And that's to think of a problem that you've had previously, an action that you did that solved the problem, and then your result. And then I always like to add an L, which means what I learned from it. So I would say a PARL rather than PAR, though PAR is oftentimes used when you talk about job interviews. So I want you to think, we're going to have a little participatory activity here. I want you to think of the story of Frodo in Lord of the Rings. Now, the other thing about a PARL story is that it needs to be short. If you're going to answer with the story, it should literally be one sentence for each one of these. So there should be a sentence for the problem, sentence for action, sentence for result, and a sentence for what I learned. So that in four quick sentences, you can say, you know, this is what happened. So think about the Lord of the Rings, the story of Frodo, and think about what was his problem. Okay, Susie, so I know you know about Frodo. How would you describe his problem in one sentence?
I think I'm mixing up Frodo with the rest, but I mean, the ultimate problem is the ring.
Right. So he's trying to, what with the ring?
I'm sorry, what was that?
So he's trying to do what with the ring?
Oh.
So if you were Frodo, how would you describe that?
Well, he has this quest that he's called to go on. So I'm sorry, I think I'm blanking right now.
Okay. So, you know, one way you could say it is, you know, I had a ring, which was a problem that I had to get rid of. Mm-hmm. What was the action that he did to get rid of the ring?
Well, so he went on this quest to take it. Oh, okay.
That's great. So, you know, his problem would be, I had to get rid of this ring. I mean, it's similar to a boss saying, you have to get rid of this problem, right? So mm-hmm. Frodo has a ring that's his problem. He has to get rid of it. And so he goes on a quest that takes him, you know, and usually in a PAR story, you try to add numbers. So you could say, and we're just making things up here. You could say, so I went on a quest that took me 89 days. And during that 89 days, the result was I was able to get rid of the ring. Mm-hmm. And what I learned from that experience was that I will always follow through with whatever, you know, I'm asked to do by my boss. So Frodo has a great Parle story that he could use at a job interview. And so I want you just to take a minute, Susie, and think of your own Parle story, if you can. Can you think of a problem that you've ever had, an action, a result, and then what you learned from it?
Yeah. There are various ones. I mean, I would say one time, just trying to like make it short, as you're saying, kind of the one sentence thing. I needed to make sure that we were following the good guidelines for publishing this book, and some of the guidelines weren't being followed, so that was the problem. And so as a team, I had to coordinate as a team to make sure that everybody understood what the requirements were and what we needed to do to get back in alignment with those guidelines so that we could get the book published on time and according to the specifications. And so doing that, it was a challenge because just getting everybody back in line with the requirements, and there, you know, there were some good reasons why maybe they didn't want to follow those guidelines. But so having that conversation with them and helping them understand, we were able to get back in alignment with the requirements and meet all the benchmarks, everything like that, so that we could get the book published.
And what did you learn from the experience?
I learned that I learned a lot of things, but I would say in that instance, the one that I learned the most is that I in tense situations, I can facilitate, get our people in line with what we need to be doing, even though maybe they didn't want to do that. So, you know, being able to lead people in what direction we need to go.
Very good. No, I'm sorry. I know I put you on the spot there. I know. Par stories are really difficult to do when you're on the spot. And that was a perfect example. But the reason, if you can have a couple of par stories, Parle stories, with the what I learned at the end, just have a couple that you have prepared, practiced, ready to go. Then in an interview, if you are asked, you know, what was the most difficult thing that you've always, you know, ever had to do in a job? Or what did you learn? What was one of the biggest learning moments that you had on a job? You have it already. And there won't be any, you know, fumbling for words or trying to figure out what I should say. So I always tell my students, if you have three par stories prepared for different behavioral questions or open-ended questions, I promise you, you will need to use at least one of them in a job interview. And if they're ready to go, then you just sound so good. You have that already, and it's one of the best skills that I think there is for job interviews. Along with that, the other thing that I have students do, and I do too, is I practice par stories and doing interviews in front of a mirror. Another way to do it is to videotape yourself. Now that seems really weird, you know, to do that. But I promise you, if you videotape yourself doing an interview or answering some of the obvious questions that you might be having, then you will be able to see if you have any verbal tics or body language tics that you do. I use my hands way too much when I'm nervous. And so I know after watching myself that that is something that I have to be careful of. Oftentimes students, when they see themselves or watch themselves, what they find is I use the word like too much, or I have this verbal tic of you know, all of us have a word that we like that we'll say often, and it can become very annoying in a job interview. And so along with the PAR story, you need to practice in a, you know, getting ready for an interview by videotaping or practicing in a mirror. Number 10 is to have questions to ask the interviewer. Usually at the end of a job interview, an interviewer will say, "Do you have any questions for me?" And when that happens, you need to be prepared and ready. And it's really great if you've done your homework and you have a very specific question about the company that shows that you care about the company and that shows that you care about what they're doing. And they really like that.
Mariana?
Yeah.
I have a question on that one. So I always feel, you know, sometimes I do have a genuine question that's related to the position, but usually I feel maybe out of everything during the interview, that's one of the things I feel most awkward about. Just like not even knowing really what kind of question about the company I should be asking, maybe especially outside of just the specifics of the job that I'm interviewing for. What kind of thoughts do you have on just guidance on what questions would be a good idea?
Here's some examples. What is a typical career path for someone in this position?
Okay.
Tell me about your organization's management philosophy, or tell me about the organizational culture here. What do you like best about working for this organization? So you're kind of flipping, you know, the interviewer, you're flipping that role. Instead, you're mm-hmm. asking them, you know, what do you like best about
right.
this? What are the typical challenges for a person working in this position? Another one, what training opportunities are provided for new employees? And finally, what are specific functions and responsibilities of this position? And how has it evolved over the last few years?
Well, those are great
questions that you can ask that uh-huh. I think are very positive and, you know, that people like to hear.
Okay, thank you. Those are very helpful.
The next one is expect some surprise questions. You know, despite all of your preparation, you're probably going to have a couple of unexpected questions. And when those questions come up, don't, you know, be careful in your response. Don't be afraid of a silence. If you need some time to think to get a good answer, don't let silence, you know, get you all flustered. You know, say, "Do you mind if I have a moment to think about that one?" Or, you know, to do something that will enable you to come up with the right answer rather than give an answer that would not be correct. I was talking to my husband, who was a partner at Microsoft for quite a few years, and he said, you know, Microsoft came up with this idea of asking a question that has nothing to do with the job, but instead has to do with seeing how well they can solve a problem. So they'll give them a ridiculously difficult problem. Like, you know, one famous one is, if you assume there is one gas station for every 1,000 cars, you know, how many gas stations would there be in the United States? And then they have to figure it out. And they don't care what answer you come up with. They don't care the number. What they're trying to do is to figure out the way you think. And I think sometimes you'll get a similar behavioral question where they are not fishing for a specific answer, but instead they're trying to see, how do you handle a question that is purposely given to you that is to catch you off guard? So practice some of those. You know, make sure that you kind of know how to handle those unexpected. The number 12th thing for you to do is to write a thank you note. Now, it's interesting. I really stress this with my students a great deal, and I am surprised as to how many students come back to me and say, you know, because I wrote a really fine thank you note on nice stationery that was really well done, I got the job. And my point with a thank you note is it doesn't matter if it's, well, it can. If you write a thank you note on stationery, make sure it's nice stationery. Make sure that you write legibly. Make sure that it's something that somebody can actually read. If you don't have those skills, then write an email. At least you can type it. But the one thing that I would say is there's 6 different parts to a great thank you note. And just to quickly go through those, make sure that in your thank you note that you know the right correct name. All too often in a thank you note, you don't, you know, if you write the name incorrectly, then right there you have a strike against you. So make sure you have the name correct. The second one is to express your gratitude specifically. Don't start with a thank you. Use a different kind of word to express thanks. So for instance, say I sincerely appreciated the invaluable advice you gave me at my interview yesterday. Then elaborate. What are you going to do with that advice? Talk very specifically. And then compliment and look ahead. Your thoughtfulness made a difference in my life. I hope that in the future we will work together. And then finally, make sure that you give your regards and express your thank you, your gratitude again. You know, thank you again for the time you spent with me, sincerely, and then your name. Now, it's amazing to me how often this part is not done. A matter of fact, there was a Wall Street Journal article that just was published 3 weeks ago, and it was entitled Where College Seniors Are Falling Short. It was written by Kelsey G. And he wrote very specifically, there were 3 things that college graduates are not doing in job interviews. The first one said is that they have mismatched skills for the job that they're going for. And his point there is when you are going for a job, even if it is something that you don't have, quote unquote, a degree in, you need to make sure that the interviewer, either through your resume and also through the job interview, understands that your skills match that job. The second thing is that they don't have passion. They need to have passion in their interview. And the third that he pointed out was thank you notes. People, you know, this rising generation, they don't write thank you notes to say thank you for the opportunity for the job interview.
Marianna? Another question. So what would you say if you interview, you know, a specific company, you interview with several different people, would you send them each an individual thank you note? And what, so I'm thinking, for example, when I interviewed for my position at BYU, I did individual interviews with some of the faculty in the department, but also there were some more informal ones where really any of the faculty members in the department were there. And so what kind of, I ended up writing a lot of interview or thank you notes. I was just kind of thinking, you know, how many should I really be writing? Should I write one to everybody that I met there, or what's your suggestion?
My suggestion is I would write one to anyone that I know that if I got the job, I would be seeing again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the positive thing there is it does 2 things. First of all, if you get the job, you already start that job with people, you know, having that positive feeling of gratitude mm-hmm. that you've said thank you. But yeah. The other thing to realize is that my own personal feeling about thank you notes that are well written. Now, you can write a thank you note that hurts you rather than helps you. And usually that means that it was done sloppily. You know, you didn't follow those 6 points. It, you know, sometimes I get thank you notes from students that I kind of go, why did you, you know, this is a waste of my time to read it. You know, it's written so sloppy and there's no sincerity because there's no specificity in it. So I would say if it's well done and well written, spend the time to make sure that happens. And if you're writing too many so that can't happen, then you're writing too many. Does that make sense?
Yeah, great. And I'm glad that you said that because, you know, I ended up writing It was about 20 thank you notes. And I was just, as I was doing it, I thought, am I just going overboard? But oh. Yeah.
And you got the job, right?
I did. So it probably helped.
I'm sure it helped. Because, you know, thank you notes do get jobs. And, yeah. You know, I think it's really important for people to realize. The next thing that I just wanted to quickly talk about, and actually the second and third things that we were going to talk about actually kind of go together, and that is kind of looking at it from the interviewer viewpoint in terms of what kinds of questions is that interviewer going to ask, what kinds of things can you kind of get from that. And in a behavior, in a job interview, you have different kinds of questions. And the number one question usually that happens is you have open and closed. You have open questions that are going to be, you know, ones that you're supposed to answer and elaborate. You have closed that are going to be just yes or no, true or false, you know, those kinds of questions. But the main thing that I want to talk about is behavior questions. And the probably the number one behavioral question is, tell me about yourself. And it's interesting because you need to think about, tell me about yourself from what is the employer looking for in the answer? And so they're looking for, number one, an icebreaker. You know, they want, you know, to feel more comfortable for them and for you. They're also looking at your nonverbal communication. How well are you handling the stress? They want to hear about your human side. They want to know about you as a person. And then it also allows you to sell yourself in terms of this job. It allows them to, you know, kind of gauge your passion. Now, some things that you can highlight as you're thinking about this question of tell me about yourself, you can highlight job skills. You can highlight your personality. You can also give some background and interests. Now, to go with that background and interest, there was a really interesting Harvard Business Review article that was just recently written by a woman she runs a nonprofit, a very large nonprofit. And she said, when I have someone come in for a job interview with me, I ask them to tell me about yourself. But she said, I like to hear about, you know, like when they were a child. You know, she said, I want them to really tell me about myself because she said, I want to find out the passion that brought them to me. And I think that's kind of an interesting perspective. I think all too often we think, oh, I'm just going to be very clinical. You know, I'm just going to tell, you know, this and this and this. But oftentimes, like I said, people want to hear your human side. So we're going to try something out. Susie, are you ready for another activity?
Yes, and I believe Caroline is on the phone too.
Oh, who is?
Caroline, are you there?
Great, yes. Sorry, I joined late, but I'm here.
Oh, great, Caroline. Both of you can try this one.
Okay.
I want you to think about the question, tell me about yourself. But along with that, I want you to think of, this is the job you're going for. You're going for the job of, you want to get a chief editor, become a chief editor at Houghton Mifflin in New York City. That's the job you're trying to get. And so you come in for the job interview, and the very first question is, tell me about myself. Tell me about yourself. What are you going to say in response? So I'm going to give you just a moment to think. And, you know, remember, think of the human side. We talked about PAR stories. You know, you can maybe bring that also in. So as soon as you have just, and these should not be long. I always tell my students that if you go longer than 30 seconds to 45 seconds with an answer, you've gone too long. If you go to a 1 minute or 1.5 minute answer, or you're going to lose your interviewer. So, you know, these should be short. So does anybody want to try it?
Caroline, I'll give you first dibs if you want it.
Okay, I can go.
Okay, go for it.
So I grew up on the East Coast in Maryland from a family of five, and I always loved books and always just marveled at how I always just wondered how they were made, you know, when I was a kid, and I thought about, you know, what it was like to write a book, and I always wanted to write books, but then when I got older, I learned that an editor was such a thing, and that I kind of decided I wanted to start editing books, and that kind of influenced my course of study when I went out to BYU in Utah, and I studied English and editing and language and all with the hopes that I would become an editor at a big publishing house. Marianne, I thought you chose a good example, by the way, as an aside, because that's kind of what I want to do. I do want to work at a big publishing
house. Well, Caroline, I would give you the job. I think you know, you did exactly the right thing in that you talked about that personal side, that passion, you know, that we've been talking about. And that was great story. It gave me the understanding of who you are and why you want the job in a very short amount of time. So fabulous job.
Thank you. I never thought to talk about like myself as a child or anything. So I learned from what you said. that's usually not what I say in interviews, but I'm going to start taking that approach instead. I usually just end up talking about like what my current life is like, mm-hmm. you know, so, but I think that's more interesting.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really powerful in terms of it was more interesting, because one thing that you have to understand from an interviewer's viewpoint is when mm-hmm. they are interviewing, oftentimes it's just interview after interview after interview. Mm-hmm. And they are writing down notes usually with each person. But along with that, if you say just these canned, rote answers without something mm-hmm. that shows that you're different than everybody else, you won't get the job. You need to stand mm-hmm. out. That's one good way to stand out, is by having those, you know, personal stories, not ones that go too far, but mm-hmm. ones that are, you know, short. The other issue that I want to talk about when we talk about interviewing and from the interviewer's viewpoint is that of the church and missions. One thing that a lot of my students ask when I have them do a PAR story, you know, problem, action, result, they always do a PAR story about their missions. Because for most of them, that's the only real management experience they've ever had. And so I asked some of my friends who are CEOs and, you know, large managers of big corporations, and I said, you know, what is your thought on, you know, using missionary stories? And the interesting thing that they came back with was, here in Utah, if you're going with a Utah company, stay away from those missionary stories because it doesn't have you stand out. You know, most people have missionary stories. And so because of that, you want to focus on maybe another story that makes you stand out in your job interview. But if you're going to New York, you know, if you're going to California, if you're going to someplace where those missionary stories would be unique, then that would be a time where you could maybe use those and have that be a very positive part of the interview. So I did want to just quickly mention that to make sure that people knew, and it goes back to that audience, you know, knowing your audience and who you're interviewing with to make sure that you have the right answers dependent upon the audience.
Cool. That's interesting. I'd always wondered about that. Like in Utah, I would think the opposite, but that's a really good point, that if everyone has mission stories, then they don't become... That's interesting.
That is interesting. A matter of fact, like I said, most CEOs that I've talked to here in Utah have said, don't do it. You know, because that's all they hear. And so when you give them something else, you know, that's what they really like.
Cool.
So the last thing that I want to do before, you know, we have any questions was I want to talk a little bit about a couple of articles and research that has been done most recently about job interviewing. One interesting thing that just literally this one was when I got just 2 weeks ago from LinkedIn was this concept. This is written by a woman from India who's an engineer. And it's called, How Do You Crack an Interview When You Know Nothing? And her point was, she said, what an interviewer is oftentimes looking for are people who can convince them that an I don't know is not a bad thing. So if you don't know the answer to a question at an interview, don't just stop with I don't know. Don't ever say you know something when you don't, but instead answer, I don't know, but I'll find out, or I don't know, but as I think about the question, these are some possible answers I could come up with. You know, so you show your problem-solving technique, but you also show that you are willing to go a step farther when you don't know an answer. She also said you can also flip those answers that you maybe don't know to show something that you do know. So, you know, if you have an answer where you don't know the answer, say, well, I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know, you know, it's something that would be related to that, and to show them that you do have understanding. You know, the third thing you can show when you have an I don't know answer is passion. And we've talked a lot about that. But, you know, it's this fire in the belly. Make sure that you show, I want this job and I'm willing to learn because I want it so bad. And then attitude, which is all about what we're talking about, making sure you have the right attitude. The other article that is from Harvard Business Review, was written by two researchers. One is at Ohio State University, and the other is at the Kellogg School of Management in Chicago. And they had done some research on job interviews and people that stay on script, that basically, you know, we talked about those PAR stories and memorizing those PAR stories. And their point was they did some analyzing of job interviews where some people had just gone so overboard with memorizing their interview script that everything sounded canned, that everything just sounded like, you know, they were just doing from a memorized, you know, something they had practiced before. And they said that basically they found that people like it when you disrupt the script a little bit, when you have a few little tangents that don't take a long time, but like I said, go back to showing your human side. Also, they pointed out making a personal connection between you and the interviewer can also be very positive. I had a student, Taylor Coleridge, who had written on his resume that he had been, you know, one of his hobbies, he wrote down, caught a 900-pound tuna going deep sea fishing in Maui. It was just, you know, it was very specific, was under the hobby section of his resume. And he said, because of that one little statement, he said a whole job interview was just because of that. And he got the job because this other guy was also a deep sea fisher and just loved his story. So, you know, making that personal connection can be very, very positive. Becoming a partner, you know, this idea of not only making a connection, but saying, oh, not, you know, we have this connection, but taking it one step farther. You know, not only do we have this connection, but I want the same thing that you want for this company. You know, I want to see this company grow just like you do. I want to do this for the company just like you do. And finally, the last thing that they brought out in their research was call out the elephant in the room. If there is something on your resume that you know is going to be a problem, or if there is something that maybe, you know, for the job, you don't quite fit the job description in terms of what they want, don't pretend like it's not there. Instead, address it right, you know, as it said, just say, I know that I don't have the qualifications that you asked for in your job description, but these are the things that I have that are just as good and just as important. So make sure if you have that, you know, that problem for a job, just call out the elephant and just hit it straight on. So those are some thoughts about kind of the latest research on interviews, and I'm open for any questions that you might have. Are you there?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
Thinking. Processing.
Do you have any questions or thoughts on anything?
I think this is Susie, and I've asked a lot of my questions along the way. I'm just thinking along the lines of students who in college, so maybe they're applying for an internship or their first job out of college. And I like really everything, all the tips you've given are really great for them. I guess just thinking probably one of the things that they need to work on the most is just practicing all of the strategies you've talked about.
The other thing that I would say is, like I said, pick a few questions that are commonly asked in an interview. You know, tell me about yourself is one that is almost always done. Some other possible questions that you can, you know, just basically practice answering would be things like, what did you like best or least about your previous job? Or what kinds of people are most frustrated with you? And then also, what kinds of people are you most frustrated with? You know, those are oftentimes used. Education, why did you choose your particular major? You know, how is your major going to help in this job? Were you an active participant in class discussions in school? Why or why not? What were your toughest and easiest college classes and why? You know, all of these you could practice beforehand. One that an HBR article specifically addressed is to have a plan. I always ask my students, where do you see yourself in 10 years from now? And I am amazed how many of them don't have a dream. You know, when I say that, they'll go, you know, I don't know. I have no idea where I'm going to be 10 years from now. And I tell them, I said, you have to have a dream. Now, that dream may change. That's okay. But the same thing is going to be true in a job interview. They're going to ask you oftentimes, so where do you see yourself in this organization 10 years from now? And you have to have a dream. You have to have a vision of where you're going in that job.
So, I have a question about that.
Sure.
So what do you suggest, like, what advice do you have for that circumstance when you're interviewing for a job that maybe it's not something, like, it's not really your dream or not really, like, a major step in your dream, but it is, like, it's a job, like, maybe you just need a job, or it would be helpful toward your career, but you're not, like, super excited about the job itself. I don't know. I found myself in that position a couple times. And yeah, like when they ask me, like, where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years? Like, if it's not there, like with that type of work, I feel kind of awkward answering that. If that makes sense.
I think that's a really good point. But also understand that, you know, someone who is looking for somebody in any position, they want someone who's a go-getter. And so to explain, you know, I'm excited about this job. I'm excited about being here now, but, you know, 5-10 years down the road, I am hoping to, you know, accomplish this and this and this. And I think that there's no one, if it's expressed in that way, that you know, you're still excited about this job now, that if you have your heights on other things, they're not going to be offended.
Okay.
You know, so it has to be balanced. It, you know, you can't go in and say, well, I'm just doing this because, you know, I can't find any other job. And
yeah, of course.
those kinds of answers don't go over well. But, you know, I think this idea of passion for even the lowliest of jobs is important. But also they like to understand that, you know, you're looking forward. You're going, you have a goal, you have a dream. You know, other than McDonald's, I think every other job wants you to have a dream. So.
Thank you. That's good advice. Good reassurance. I have another question.
Sure.
What are your feelings on, like, applying for something that you're not qualified for necessarily, but something you're really interested in and might be shooting a little high? Do you take the attitude of, you know, it's worth a shot, you never know? Or do you take the attitude like, don't waste the interviewer's time? And don't waste your own time? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I'm 100% for, you know, go for the gusto, you know, shoot for the moon, go the whole way. It's amazing, story after story that I find from my own life and from other people's lives, that, you know, those that have made it into their dream job is because they did just that, you know, because they were willing to go farther, you know, to go to those job interviews. Did they always get it? No. But usually what happened along the way, they made connections. So when you go into one of those interviews, you need to make sure that, number one, you show that passion. But number two, you also express how the things that you've done do help you to be prepared for that job. And then number three, even if you don't get it, make sure that you, you know, give that thank you note and massage that connection. Because oftentimes what will happen is you might not get it that year, but if you have a great job interview, they'll remember you and it can get you a job maybe the next year. So I'm 100% for that.
I can attest to that. So there is a job that I applied for and it came down to me and one other person, and the other person was eventually selected. But then later on, they had a position open up. And so they contacted me and said, hey, we'd like you to apply. And I got that job. So definitely, you know, I showed in the first time around that I was really interested. And so the next time it was the right time. So yeah.
Cool.
Perfect.
Thank you. Those are really helpful, reassuring.
Okay, we should probably, go ahead.
Oh, that's it.
Okay. We should probably wrap up since it is 5:00. So I just want to say, Mariana, thank you so much for this information.
Yeah, thank you.
Obviously, you can tell from the questions I was asking. You know, I learned a lot, and I'm excited to share it with my students and other people. And I know everybody who is going to be listening to this recording afterward will have a lot to benefit from your information. So thank you very much for leading our conversation today. And thanks for those who joined in. And we will get back with you for next month's roundtable. So watch out for details on that. So thank you one more time, Marietta, and everybody have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you, Mariana. So good.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.